Welcome to this episode of Naked Men Talking, a podcast exploring naturism and the power of getting it closer. I'm Gareth Johnson. On today's episode, we're joined by Stefan Dahl. Stefan is the man behind the Quinta Project, an eco-queer experimental space in Portugal. Stefan, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You established the Quinta Project in 2021, and you describe it as an eco-queer experimental space. What exactly is an eco-queer experimental space?
Okay, cool. Yeah. It was really a little bit of a journey to get to the final result, which was started in 2021, as you just said. And it was very much a personal journey for me as well. So I lived for many years in very urban spaces. I lived in London, I lived in Barcelona, in Brussels, worked a lot in Hong Kong, and of course interacted very happily with a very urban gay culture. And what I was missing was really a lot more deep and authentic connections, both between people and between nature. And so the original idea, which I sort of started working in 2016, I think, was to build a community which was built more around authentic connections. And then relatively quickly, it became clear to me it wouldn't work really in an urban space where there's so much distraction. You can go there and go there, meet other people. And so it became really a space that needed to be in a natural, local, rural environment. And that then became, in some part or another, the Quinta Project. And on the way, I discovered there were lots of people who had the same idea or had the same longing for, go back or go forward, maybe even with nature, and have these connections and be really you in a connection, which often, and this sounds counterintuitive, but I think often you can't really be in an urban space, but you can be in a rural space because you're in this complete freedom and liberty. And that then kind of brought me to this thing called the Quinta Project, or Quinta is simply farm in Portuguese. And there was then really the idea to build this community and create a safe space in nature, where queer people can come and experiment with how it feels to live like this. Because I think if you look at queer culture and the queer narrative in particular, it's often built around you need to leave rural environments and go into urban spaces to be really you. And so doing the reverse journey seems tricky and difficult sometimes. But the Quinta, basically the invitation is be you, but in a rural space, and experiment how it feels like to be queer, to engage with ecology, be in an ecological project. And obviously the focus there is a lot on ecology and kind of caring for nature, and celebrate diversity, celebrate the joy of being queer and connect it all with the joy of being in nature and in those kind of spaces like the Quinta, for example.
It almost sounds like it has echoes of the counterculture movements of the 60s. It's almost a bit of a hippie vibe, that kind of thing, of, heading back to nature, opting out, building community and connection. Is that a tradition you're drawing on?
It absolutely is, yeah, totally. I mean, there is a lot of all these kind of, like, I don't know if you're familiar with the Lavender Farm Project, for example. So these kind of narratives that have been brought back into the Quinta Project, and I've always been very lucky to be joined by a lot of other people who were creating things around the Quinta Project. Like, for example, we have a book club, and the book club has been drawing a lot on this kind of counterculture 60s movement. Of course, that then influences really the practice on the land and on the Quinta, because ultimately it's what that is all about. Indeed, it's kind of, creating these, I guess, a more modern version would be the word, than it was in the 1960s, and learning from maybe things that didn't go quite so well there, and creating another space. And of course, one of the big things, for example, is Lavender Farm project would be, it's not a permanent space for people to live. I'm the only person who lives there permanently, but it's more a space where you can come experiment with living in a relatively similar way, and then you can sort of go out again, or indeed start your own project if you feel that that's a really cool way of living.
And the farm is a queer space, and you're also a bit of a naturist. So is the farm a queer naturist space as well?
I really struggled with this one, and I continue to struggle with this. I kind of always say we're naturist friendly, but that feels completely wrong. Because I think what really captures the essence is that we are naturally naturist. Because it's not a defined space where naturism is allowed and can happen. Instead, it's really a space that invites to be naturist, because when you're connecting with nature, it really is about feeling this environment, you know, feeling the sun, feeling the wind. What comes to my mind, for example, is particularly in winter, you have this enormous differences of felt temperature when you're in the sun and when you're in the shade in Portugal. So you know, you feel a little bit like a plant, if that makes sense, when you're walking around. And so wanting to feel this, but also not wanting to be it just makes sense not to be closed in that environment. Mm. Wherever possible, of course. So you have to kind of balance this a little bit, because it's still a farm. And it's a working farm. So there are the little parts where, you know, for example, I don't know, if you're streaming or you're land clearing or so, you just simply need to have clothes on to protect yourself. And also sometimes there are, of course, people who are coming like visitors. So then it's not a naturist place, depending on the visitor, of course. But generally, I think I think naturally naturist captures the idea. It just feels weird to put on clothes in the morning to have a coffee on the terrace. It's just not, quote unquote, natural.
And how did you discover and start to explore that naturism was something that you connected with?
I was very lucky. I mean, I was brought up, as you probably hear from my accent, I was brought up in Germany. My parents weren't really counterculture hippies, but they still took me to naturist beaches as a kid. It was completely, completely natural for me. They weren't particularly naturist at home, but seeing naked bodies was not an unusual thing. And of course, Germany has a lot of nature happening just spontaneously.
Yeah, I was going to say, there is a bit of a cultural feature of Germany, isn't it? Like that, it's slightly different approach to the naked body than other cultures, perhaps.
Yeah. For example, I remember going to school, primary school, so, you know, kind of in the summer, we were passing through a park and there was a naturist area. So, and it was perfectly normal to see that. And then I have to say, I lost it a little bit when I moved out of Germany, and it became a thing I practice on beaches, maybe on the occasional naturist party or so, but really it became very contained in certain areas. And then I rediscovered it, and that's also why I like this idea actually of naturally naturist farm, when I moved back here, to Portugal, to the Winter Project. And then discovered how natural it feels not to put on clothes and just to be in nature, and how liberating it is then. And how, for me at least, it feels it brings me much, much closer to nature by feeling what's going on around me than being protected with a lot of clothes and a little distance, you know, it feels like.
It's interesting that the move to Portugal wasn't driven by a desire for more naturist opportunities. Kind of the move to Portugal was for the project, but then what followed was a reconnection with your naturism. That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, and indeed it wasn't, you know, there's really no intention of, you know, living the naturist life just because of living the naturist life in Portugal. It was warmer, so that really wasn't part of my thinking at the time. It then just happened along the way.
And what was your relationship with your body like when you were growing up? You talked about how, you know, obviously in Germany, a fairly relaxed attitude to nudity and the body kind of thing. Was body image something that you've had to navigate at any stage through your development?
I mean, maybe as a kid, it wasn't something I ever thought about, but I do remember sort of, you know, after particularly, so probably after moving away from Germany, it was really something I was never uncomfortable with being naked, but it was really hard for me at the time with body issues. So I felt I was quite fat. And so, you know, having all these ideas of I'm not a mainstream beautiful person. I was not sort of Jim Bath in particular. And I really bought into this idea in my 20s and 30s and so on. It was this, again, very much urban environment, particularly London environment, was at the time was very much about that kind of youth culture and the gym culture in one form or another. And I think I then started to move away from that right in my 40s and really appreciate more natural bodies. And, you know, and that also gave me more confidence in many ways to kind of say, well, I'm naturally this way, and, you know, be a bit more realistic also, kind of like, you know, like I'm not seeing myself necessarily as kind of fat guy, which is really not true, but really seeing it sort of like, I'm a sporty person, but I'm not ripped. Then the journey, of course, you know, but kind of being much more of a naturist then kind of really brought that forward. And so now I don't have any issues at all, I think. Like, of course, you know, you kind of like, yeah, kind of the issue now and again, or I wish, or maybe drinking less wine might be a good idea. But,
Well, let's talk about wine, because that is one of your passions. And so are you growing grapes on the Kinta farm? How are you pursuing your winemaking these days?
So there are two things there. On the Kinta, we have wild grapes, which are not very good for winemaking, but they're super interesting because they're wild. They have been planted there maybe 100, 150 years ago. So they're really, really old. And because they haven't been cultivated, they do what grapes do, which means they grow into trees, and you can walk on one part of the Kinta. You have a little pathway which goes along a stream, and that's where a lot of them grow, and they grow up in the trees. And so you see these trees like 5-6 meters high, and on the top there are bunches of grapes, because that's what wines would normally do, because they just produce the grapes where the sunlight is. On the other hand, I have another project, which is the vineyard project itself and the wine project. That is, it's a little bit away from the Kinta, it's about 5 kilometers away. And it's its own little farm. So it has, of course, wine and vines. But it also has lots of chestnut trees, other fruit trees, cork oak. It has some farm buildings, a huge water tank, which actually, funnily enough, looks a little bit like an infinity pool. It's also sort of on the top. There's a little hill on there, and it sort of sits right on the top there. It has a small kitchen and outdoor seating area, which is extremely, it's kind of big, so saying romantic, overlooks the wine. So you're sitting under old cork oak and you're overlooking the wine, and you're overlooking kind of the little hilly bit that this particular farm is. And it's a place that is really fun to be in. And I organize, at the moment what I do is I organize some dinners there, and we have some regular potluck parties there for people, particularly for people around the communities. And this summer we're starting something new, which is called Vineyard Disco, which is actually inspired by some of the gatherings I had at the Kinta last year. We always made like one evening at the vineyard, and so then it became this sort of thing of, you know, let's do a vineyard disco and just spend the evening there, spend the night at the vineyard, maybe camping or so, and dancing, and do whatever you want to do in a vineyard, which is kind of a lot of fun. And it's a very lovely place to be. And so while the Kinta is very much a sort of a wild space, also with the wild grapes kind of growing, and kind of it's very rocky territory in parts, and it has a lot of overgrowth and kind of forest parts. And it's right in the mountains, of course, and you're sort of looking up to a big mountain with an old castle on top. The vineyard has a very different feel. It's also interesting to explore because it's much more serene, it's tranquil, it's in a bit of a different part. We're located in a nature park. It's a bit of a different part of the nature park. So it's just that these two spaces are quite different, but at the same time, really, really nice to explore together.
Mm. And what sort of wines are you making there?
I like to think of them as being weird, wild, and wonderful, or another, it's a little bit as being queer wines. So I try to start off with making natural wines. That means We try not to add things and not to take away things from the wine. And the other idea for me is very much to think about making wines that are fabulously rule-defying, or at least expectation-defying for many people. So, for example, a nice example of this is at the moment, well, last year we made one wine, which is a red wine. It's a sweet red wine, which most people already, ooh, what on earth are you doing there? So it's a dessert wine. And it also ages in big glass balloons. And these big glass balloons are located actually on the Quinta. And they're just in a field, in a very rocky stone field. There's a sort of stone circle in there, these glass balloons. And so they're out there in the heat, in the sun, in the cold of winter, in the rain. They are protected so that animals can't go in, but oxygen can go in and out. So it's things that people, I think if you take a rule book of winemaking, it's breaking every single rule you should be doing. I can also tell you the wine is absolutely fantastic. So if you have some chocolate and you have that wine at the same time, it's absolutely amazing.
And you're describing the wine as queer wine in a way. I'm just wondering what that means. Is, how does the queer perspective intersect with winemaking in that sense?
I think it's really about broadening the idea of what wine is. So in many ways, if you look at conventional wines in particular, they are binary, probably, red and white, maybe rosé in the middle. They are also, it feels like people are putting a straitjacket on wine. If you're creating a Sauvignon Blanc, which has to taste like a Sauvignon Blanc, and there's a certain expectation that it has to taste like this. And many winemakers, I don't want to trash conventional winemaking. I have a conventional wine education, so I'm very happy with what they're doing. But they're aiming for a particular type of wine. And this always reminds me of heteronormative societies. Like you're aiming for a particular outcome, and this is what you want. Now, the inverse of this is, in a way, not to ask the wine, but to say to the wine, do what you want to do. And that's, for me, is natural winemaking. And then what I do as a winemaker is maybe change the way that the wine can go in small ways to make the wine even more expressive of what it really wants to do. And so, for example, we have a Tempranillo, which for most people would be a normal red wine, often oaked. And ours is orange in color, tastes like rhubarb custard pie in many ways, has a little bit of sparkle, but it's a Tempranillo. And it's a wonderfully crazy idea if you're sitting there where it's kind of like, okay, I'm having it, it's 100% Tempranillo, and you're getting that. And it's like a wonderful, wonderful thing. And that for me is bringing also queer ideas into action, because we didn't add anything to the Tempranillo. We let it do its own thing. The only thing that we did was kind of, to press it quicker than you would normally do. And so this is what has come out of it at the other end.
Amazing. That sounds delicious. With the Kinta project, you're also creating opportunities for people to volunteer and come and work with you on the farm. How does that work? You sort of mentioned how you're the only one who lives there permanently and people come and go. How do people sort of come and be a volunteer on the farm?
So the easiest way is just simply to go onto the website, the farm website, that's kintaproject.org. And there is a page which explains and also has a little calendar to show when things are available. Basically, there are two types of volunteers at the moment. So one which are like 5 days or so, which is really needed to kind of get to grips with the space, to 2 weeks. So it's kind of like a short-term holiday volunteering if you want. Another one, which is a longer one, which is like 2 to 3 months, which is really if you want to explore something much more in depth. So if you want to come for the short term, which is like 5 days, 2 weeks, it's a pretty straightforward deal. You get free accommodation and food in return for sort of a structured, if you so want, 4 hours of work a day. So that means you have a bit of a balance of free time and doing things at the farm, and just you're basically part of whatever needs to be done at that particular period of time. So normally what volunteers would do is they would you just submit a form or kind of, send me an email and say, hey, I'm interested in coming this time at this time. I'll normally set up a Zoom call with you and talk what I expect to be done at this period of time. I know this can sometimes go terribly wrong. Like last year, for example, the vintage came really early and I had a very nice volunteer there who at the time I told, oh, it's going to be quite easy. It's about watering gardens, and suddenly it was kind of harvesting. But generally the idea is kind of you have a rough understanding of what we want to do, and then we agree. And basically the volunteers come, they have their own room. Of course, you can be in a tent. Everything else around the farm is shared. Yeah, and it's an interesting experience for many people to be in that space and kind of to see how it is really living like this on a daily basis.
And what sort of people are attracted by that sort of a opportunity? What are they looking for from the experience?
It's really unique. So in the first year I was running this, we had 90 volunteers, almost 90 volunteers. And it's been really unique, both for me as a host as well as for the volunteers. But I think one of the things that's probably common to everyone was, and also I really enjoy it, is kind of having really interesting discussions because you are in a fairly close space. And so you have a lot of discussions, for example, about creative life, about nature, about ecology, increasingly, of course, about wine. It's about how things work because, again, it's often unexpected how things work on in a really ecological context there. Then I guess many volunteers come just simply because they're curious about rural life. Many volunteers also had wanted to start their own projects, and so they were sort of dipping their toe into it or tried to find out if I am trying to do something like this, what do I need to do? Some other volunteers come maybe a bit more from a theory or an academic background, if you so want, so particularly eco-queer theory, and want to experience how does that work if I put this into practice, and at the same time not have it as a particular art project, for example, but rather as a practical project where, it's really about we grow our own food, at least the majority of it. And so, what do we need to do and how do we go about it in a very practical context? And another part of people who do come are attracted by loosely termed eco-sensuality. So in one way or another of kind of how to connect, for example, on an emotional or also on a sexual level, to the land, to nature, and being in this pretty wild surroundings, and what that does to them or also kind of to other people around them.
Oh, eco-sexuality is an interesting concept, isn't it?
It is, and it's a very, I think it's, yeah, it's something to really experience. I don't think you can really explain it. I mean, you can watch wonderful movies about it, about marrying water and marrying the earth. But it's something that there is something about it. And actually, one of the fun things I always used to do at the beginning with people was to go around, particularly if they sort of mentioned that they are into the eco-centrality or eco-sexuality context, is just to walk around the Kinta. And kind of said, like, just imagine what you feel sexually on different parts of the land. And it's because it's quite different in the landscape, and it's quite an interesting space then to kind of walk around and kind of feel like, how does, if I were to put this into a sexual scene, how does this place here kind of feel like? What does that space here feel like? Might have something more serene and tranquil spaces, which be very romantic, or other ones which are more rocky parts and wild, which feel maybe more kinky, or for other people it might be much more meditative space. So it's an interesting thing also how people then relate to it and re react to it. So it's a very kind of
Oh, yeah, that's fascinating, yeah.
interesting walk around the Kinta. And of course now the other group of people that's coming is a lot of people who are interested in the wine project. It's really, if you're into, if you're a wine buff, it's kind of a great place. A bit of a queer wine buff in a sense of kind of unusual wines, then it's about making natural wines, unusual wine styles, because I think you don't really make anything that's reasonably usual. Of course, it's also the only place really where you can work in the vineyard naked, you can make wine naked, you can harvest naked, and it's kind of like a cool thing to do.
When the obvious fantasy is crushing the grapes naked somehow, just adding a bit of naturist flavor into the product.
Yes, you could do it, but we actually use grape crushers, which
Yes. Oh, yeah.
but you can switch them on and off naked if you really want to. There's no problem.
I guess my final question is, what is the sort of plan with the Kinta project? What are some of the milestones that you're working towards? What's on the agenda for the future for you?
So the idea is to basically develop the project as such. So the idea at the moment for me is the Kinta to increasingly become self-sufficient, a self-sufficient space run as this kind of experimental space, also with a lot of input from volunteers who then run basically this main house and farm vegetables, farm things for our own consumption. Then on the vineyard or on the wine project, it's also an interesting time at the moment because I bought it last year. And before that, it was a conventionally farmed vineyard, conventionally established vineyard. And now I'm starting to transition to certified ecological production and also using some of the biodynamic methods. So it's an interesting part there to support the vines who are a little bit shocked that, suddenly all the chemicals are gone. And then they literally have to relearn to be natural, and all the irrigation is gone, and all the kind of things that the previous owners used to do. At the same time, there's a lot of space on the vineyard which hasn't been used as yet. And my ambition is there to create much more of a permaculture approach to wine making and wine grape growing in the end. And that's an interesting challenge in itself because permaculture has a lot of ideas about how to do vegetables. But unfortunately, the vineyards seem to be ra rare and few in between. And so it's interesting to also, I work together with a couple of people from particular permaculture movement to kind of come up with ideas what we can do and to transform this while at the same time leaving it as a vineyard and not creating a sort of a completely different space. So those are the two main big things for this year. And at the moment, for example, there's a lot of construction work going on in the main house, which used to be half a ruin. And it's almost finished. And then we'll have more volunteer spaces as well, which is really great.
Amazing. Sounds like an exciting time. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode. You can find me on Twitter at GTV London. Today's guest has been Stefan Dahl. Everything you need is on his website, kinterproject.org. Stay naked, stay sexy. We'll see you next time. Bye.